Hey everyone, I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com, and welcome to another snack size edition of our show, How Success Happens. Every week, we are digging into the archives and giving you a quick hit of inspiration from one of the many fantastic people we get to talk to on this show. Hey, did you hear that noise? That's my dog Clark wiggling in the background. He wants to be a part of the show too, and so should you. I'm going to jump right to this and say, hey, if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a comment. We'll read it on the air, or hit me up at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com. Anyway, back to the thing that we're talking about today, which is dogs. So the 51st season of SNL premiered last night. And since I'm recording this weeks in advance of that, it was either hilarious or it stunk. Hey, I'm a big fan, and if you are too, you'll admit that they aren't all knee slappers. But it reminded me of my conversation with one of the people who was there on season one, who is indeed very much a knee slapper. He is responsible for some of the funniest moments on that show, like when he played Julia Child and turned a cooking segment into an absolute bloodbath. He's also responsible for writing and co-starring in some of the greatest comedy movies ever made. Ghostbusters, I'm looking in your direction. I'm talking, of course, about Dan Aykroyd, a guy who is as friendly to speak with as his last name is hard to spell. Seriously, try to write it down and see if you are remotely correct. Anyway, Dan is, as you may know, also the co-founder of Crystal Head Vodka, which is an award-winning brand that comes in a signature crystal skull-shaped bottle. It was launched in 2008, and back in 2020, I spoke to him when the company released Onyx, which is a variation that came in this awesome glossy black bottle. And the juice inside was made with Blue Weber agave, which they say was sourced from a single farm in Mexico. I don't know exactly what that means, but I'll just tell you what it tasted like. It was like vodka with a touch of tequila. I finished it a long time ago, but man, I still dream about it from time to time. Anyway, back to Mr. Aykroyd. Having co-created this wildly successful booze company, I asked him for his advice to all you upcoming distillers out there. So here's what he had to say.
So you got to have quality in your product so that people are going to taste it and go, wow, this, I have to have this in my bar, in my operation, my business, or at home. I got to buy it on retail. You have a package that's going to catch the consumer in retail. The consumer has, it's estimated in retail, you have 3 seconds to catch the consumer's eye.
Yes.
Walk down there, that housewife or that house husband or that, you know, that shopper is going to go down, and he's going to go down that aisle, and he's going to have 3 seconds, that's it, to catch them. If they can,
right,
they stop for three, after three, and look for the fourth, there's a chance they'll stay for the fifth and the sixth and the seventh. Maybe they might reach out and touch it. And if they stay for 8 or 10 seconds, they might even pick it up and hold it. And if you've got them then, they're going to buy it. So you have a package with the quality, with a legend, and ultimately, folks, here it is. You've got a gin, you got a vodka, a beer. It's boots on the ground. It's your friends. It's salespeople. It's ambassadors. This is how Sidney Frank built Grey Goose into a billion-dollar brand. This is how J.P. DeJoria built Patron into a billion-dollar brand. This is how all the ones were built. Kettle One, the Nollet Brothers, Absolute, Belvedere, Chopin, Sky, all of them were built with ambassadors in buses and trucks on planes going out, showing the bar chefs how to use the product, how to price it. And so ultimately, that's it. Quality, a neat package, a cool story to go with it, a legend, and then, you know, assurance of manufacture and boots on the ground.
I love that.
Jeez, I just lost my 1.5 liter bottle. Thank you.
Oh, no.
They never break. They never break. I broke one, I think, at the Natural History Museum on that beautiful terrazzo floor. That was the hardest substance. I've thrown them at the wall. They would make a terrible Molotov cocktail. They just don't break.
So then, having given his own advice, I asked Dan if he could tell us the best and worst advice he received. And that touched on some exciting moments in business, like succeeding in new territories when everyone told you you were nuts. But it also brought up some of the not-so-fun realities of being in a leadership position.
Well, one guy tried to tell me, no, no, don't do Patron. It's going to fail in Canada. Just stay with the wines. And I, no.
Okay.
I think the best advice, and certainly I've learned it myself and followed it, is if you have an organization, you're building a company, and there's someone in there, some individual in there, that is a disruptive and negative influence that is causing anxiety in the office, that is trying to undermine the enterprise, at the first sign of that, you've got to cut that person and they got to go. And I always, as my father ran about 10,000 employees in the federal government. He retired as Deputy Minister of Transport for Canada, Assistant Deputy Minister of Transport in the Trudeau government. He was an engineer. He built a parkway, a highway up north of Ottawa, Canada. He was an extremely accomplished executive and delegator. And he always said, you know, he had to let a lot of people go. He had to hire and fire. And he said, always let them go on a Monday morning. Don't do it Friday because they've got the weekend to stew and get begrudged. But you do it on a Monday and you don't do it at work. You go to a neutral place, a coffee shop, you sit down. And I've done this numerous times. You sit down and you say, you're moving on. I think it's best for you. Here's your severance, whatever. And it's Monday morning and now you have a whole week to figure your life out. It's tough.
Yeah.
But that way you have a little compassion. It worked for him and it worked for me. And you do it with compassion.
Yeah.
But no, any bad influence, anybody, any bad apples, cut them quick.
And is that true for your career in entertainment as well?
We had people on some of the movies that they weren't working out, and we're a team. All those films, all that radio and television that we did, all the records we made, the TV, the films, the radio, the records, the writing, it was collaboration and teamwork. You have to get that common assessment and work towards that common goal. If you have someone undermining that, you know, it's best to eliminate that influence if you can.
And then, given that he is a professional funny person as well as a business person, I asked him about his approach to risk-taking and any advice he could give for shaping our mindsets to get ready to do big, crazy things. He didn't really give any mindset advice, but he did list a kind of astounding litany of risks he's taken over the years, including details on one incredibly dangerous hobby.
Going to Saturday Night Live and auditioning. I think I did 4 or 5 auditions before Lauren decided that I was going to do it. And I lied a job with John Candy at the Second City in Pasadena, California, a good paying job with an apartment, a car, an allowance, per diem, salary. I risked that. I chose to go to SNL instead. So that was a risk. I took the money for my daughter's college fund, my 3 daughters, Danielle, Belle, and Stella, and I put it into the vodka business, and that was a risk, but I did it with their approval, and now I've replenished, and I have a Harvard graduate, cum laude, and I've got a Reed College graduate with laurels from Reed College in Oregon, and my other daughter, the third one, my writing partner now, Stella, she got into Bennington College. Got in without any help or interference in an illegal or fraudulent way, made it in there, but she left because it was not for her college, and now we're working on stuff. So risked that and came through all right. I think if you can handle worry, you're okay. I think another thing is I ride a motorcycle, and I still ride a motorcycle, and I started riding when I was 18 or 19, and you build up a lot of nerve when you're riding a motorcycle. I've missed some tangents on curves on the New York Thruway. I've been through really slick, bad mud. I've never had to lay it down. I've hit by a driver from behind. A drunk hit me once. And
whoa.
What else? I've had stuff fly at me, you know, bees hitting me in the eye, timber coming off a truck I've had to avoid. So I think the motorcycle builds the nerve.
Yeah. That certainly sounds like it. Or that's, I don't know if a lot of people would get back on one after half of those things you just mentioned.
No, I know. I took a risk being in a jet fighter once. Of course, you know, I was in, for the movie Dragnet, I rented a T-38 Talon or an F-5 interceptor made by Northrop. And we went up in it to film a sequence with the pilot and owner, a lovely gentleman named Chuck Thornton, a spectacular aviator and entrepreneur. And, you know, he said, well, Dan, you know, it's a jet fighter. You know, there is a chance that it may depart from what it's supposed to do. And this is not the departure at gate number 6 when you're getting on the United. No, this is the departure of the system that brings you to the Earth. You're going to have to go through ejection training. So
wow.
He took me through it, you know, and I had a briefing, a half day sort of briefing with it, a couple hours and familiarizing. And it was basically, you know, command, when he gives you the command, elbows in, hit the trigger, beat the seat. So you got to hear the command, you put your elbows in, you hit the trigger, the elbow, so you don't hit on the way out. And then when you're in midair, pop through the canopy, that's when you beat the seat and hit the parachute. But it's funny how you remember things that could save your life years later, right? So I took a risk in that, but it turned out to be a great ride. I lost it when he dropped me into the Box Canyon going 700 miles an hour, or 400 miles an hour, and the wind, you know, it's going, the walls were going by like we were in Star Wars. And so I reached for the bag then. But after that, he had me take the machine and he said, just pull it back 2 inches, the stick. And I went like that and the thing went right up like this.
Wow.
So hit the stick with the back of your knuckles there.
Okay.
2 inches and down we went like that. He said, hold it for 3 seconds. We roll 3 seconds. It was a lovely ride, but again,
lovely ride. I love that.
A risk.
So can you handle worry? Can you handle the truth? I don't even know what I'm saying, which means that it is time to wrap things up here. As always, thanks so much for listening. And extra thanks to those of you who have subscribed, given us star ratings, or left us a comment on the show. That's a hint. A lot of you haven't left comments, and I would love to hear what you think. And if you leave a comment, good or bad, I'm going to read it on the show. That's the risk I'm willing to take. Okay, let's make like Dan Aykroyd, hop on our bikes, get out there, and go eat some bees. See you next time.